Good afternoon, good morning. This is the Football Full Disclosure. Talking to you is Dean Sanusi. Hi, I'm joined by Martin Bailey.
Hello, how are we doing?
So, we had game week 6, game week 7. We obviously had the golden week. How was your holiday?
It was good. It was relaxed. That's all I wanted.
That's it. I think, yeah. I've got family over right now, so not as relaxing. But they're going to listen to this. And now they're going to know I'm not fully relaxed. No, but I am relaxed. No, it was a nice holiday. But let's get onto it. Game week 7. Let's head to the G-Tech Community Stadium. You know where that is, right? That is somewhere in Southwest London, West London. It's not far from whereabouts I used to live. And it's actually Brentford Wolves. And that was a mad game. That was 5-3.
Goals galore.
Goals galore. And you know something? Brentford are doing this thing. They are scoring I think they scored a goal within 2 minutes.
It's happened many times.
It's happening, yeah. I think they've got a trend of just scoring very, very early goals. For me, I think this was this was a masterclass in how not to defend. Very much a masterclass. How not to defend, but how to attack. Because you had, goals from, again, Brian Mbeumo. Thank God he's in my fantasy football league.
He's doing very well.
He's doing really, really well. Carvalho, who we sold. Full disclosure, we are Liverpool supporters. So, there we go.
But it's nice to see Carvalho getting some game time. Because obviously they're bedding him in slowly, which obviously they should. But he's had a bit of game time now. He got a goal. It's good.
Yeah. I think one of the takeaway from the game was it felt like a basketball game. It was just back and forth, back and forth. You attack, we attack, you attack, we attack. Just back and forth. It was essentially a basketball game and it ended obviously 5-3. I think it's going to be massively frustrating for managers looking at that game thinking, okay, it's great we can score goals, but please, please defend better. Should Wolves be worried?
As I said last time, I think they will be okay. They've had a really tough run of fixtures. I mean, probably one of the hardest runs of fixtures at the start of any season. They couldn't have had it much harder than they did. I would be disappointed, though, because Brentford would be a place I'd like to go
point.
Be losing by a 2-goal margin.
Get something from the game. But honestly, for me, Cunha, for Wolves, he's going to be the difference. He's going to be a massive, massive difference because somehow, some way, he's getting goals from midfield. He's playing up front in some cases, but he's getting them goals. Ait Nouri, I drafted him into my fantasy football team. And for a team that conceded 5 goals, he left the fantasy football with 9 points. So
really?
Yeah, 9 points. I know, right?
Yeah, that's not bad at all. He
scored, he assisted, so he did relatively, he did okay. So anyway, I think Wolves, you think Wolves shouldn't be worried?
I'd be concerned, but I think they've had a really tough start.
Yeah.
And I think the games when they're playing the Leicesters, maybe the Evertons, Ipswich, Palace, Southampton, you'd expect them to be picking points up against these teams,
right? They should be.
And it's not going to take an awful lot. They only need one win to get out of the danger zone.
The relegation, still early days, isn't it?
Exactly. You get a couple, 2 or 3 wins, you start to get a bit of momentum, and then you're middle of the table, and then I think your worries are almost behind you. So I think once they get a better run of fixtures, I think they will pick up some points. It's a tough start.
It's a tough start. Okay, let's head over to the Etihad, the 115 charges looming over this team, who actually, if you've read the news, they won a case.
They did.
Well, they say won. Okay, let's stop right there. They didn't win a case, but they took elements of the case and they argued that they were correct. But the Premier League also argues that we were correct. And so a lot of it is to do with how they value the loans that they're getting from their owners and everything else of that nature. So anyway, let's head over to the Etihad, and that was City Fulham. And that was a 3-2 win for Manchester City. But the main thing I think we really need to talk about is Fulham's away kit. I think that away kit needs to be investigated for copyright infringement because there were times where I thought I was watching AC Milan.
Really?
Honestly, if you can get that picture up, their away kit, it's a spitting image of the AC Milan's kit. It's black, red, black, and red and black stripes. It's honestly, it's a dead ringer for an AC Milan kit.
Same brand. is it same? Well, I mean, that,
it could be.
They run out of ideas. You see a lot of the Nike kits and the Adidas kits. They just kind of replicate it throughout, don't they? Change it slightly.
It could be. But there were times where I wondered, like, is this AC Milan? Is this a Champions League game? But either way, I think honestly, what that game shows is that Rodri is a massive, massive, massive loss for Manchester City. Not just Rodri, but I guess Kevin De Bruyne also didn't feature in that game. And it's just, you know, Manchester City are open. And honestly, if, you know, let's think about a world where Adama Traore can actually finish off his chances.
Yeah, he had some...
Could have had a hat-trick.
He was away a few times.
He was one-on-one with the keeper a couple of times. And I think, honestly, he puts those chances away. It's a different game. It's a real different game, man.
Yeah, I mean, City are dropping points at the very least, but yes, they could have lost. They had a lot of chances as well.
Yeah,
you know, obviously.
Oh, it's Manchester City.
You'd expect them to. But as you said, defensively, against other teams, I mean, actually, Fulham played pretty well, but against other teams... Yeah, those chances will be taken away. Or another game against Fulham, he will take those chances, and then it ends up, you know, they end up losing or they draw, right?
But then you go back to game week 6, which was, you know, City versus Newcastle, and that game ended 1-1, obviously. And again, you just see Newcastle are playing their game against City. Obviously, granted, Newcastle, they're at home, and you know they should be allowed to play their game. But this City looks like a regular side. They look like a normal side without Rodri,
which is nice because then we've got a more competitive Premier League, haven't we?
I think Pep will be worried, and Pep will, you know, the Manchester City machine will be looking at, you know, players to bring in to replace Rodri, just because they look open, they look fragile to me personally. So I think all hail the Premier League. Let's hope for somebody else other than City winning the Premier League this season.
It'd be nice, wouldn't it?
It would be nice. Let's head over to the Emirates. So we had Arsenal, Southampton. God, Southampton, it's tough.
It is going to be tough.
It's going to be tough.
I think they're a team I would be more concerned about than Wolves. I think Southampton are going to have a tough time of it throughout all of this season.
I think
But again, you're against Arsenal, and Arsenal are a very good side.
They took a...
good performances, good finish from Havertz. Yeah. Saka, as always, does his stuff, doesn't he? He's good.
But Southampton did take a surprise lead, and, you know, it was a return for Ramsdale. You know, he had a good few good saves. But, you know, for Arsenal, it would have been, did we do the right thing in selling Ramsdale? And unfortunately, categorically, it proves like they did. You know, I think, you know, Ramsdale, he's a top quality keeper, but probably just not the level that Arsenal need. You know, it's a real shame how it's all ended, and he's moved to another side that's probably going to get relegated. I think he's got a poor record for playing for teams that have been relegated. He's been relegated, what, 3 times already?
Really?
I think so.
I didn't know that.
I think so. He's been relegated, a couple of times with Bournemouth. Almost definitely somebody else, and unfortunately it looks like he probably will be relegated with Southampton, because the way things are going, it doesn't look good. But somehow they took an early lead at the Emirates. You know, it was Cameron Archer, it was a surprise goal, you know, it was really good work from him. But I just think Southampton, they don't have that, I want to say je ne sais quoi. they're missing that. I think, you know, not just je ne sais quoi, but they're missing tenacity in the Premier League. I think they need something to keep, something solid, possibly in the midfield.
It's difficult to keep a lead. They kept it for 3 minutes.
They did.
So, you know, they had a go, but you've got to keep it together. You get the goal, then you've got to stay calm. You know, you've got to be compact, and you've got to keep going.
Yeah.
And again, they didn't manage that, did they?
You know, I think a bigger issue is also the manager, Russell Martins, I think his name is. He's desperate to play his style of football. He wants to play his, you know, playing out from the back, which, you know, I want to talk about playing out from the back, because that's a whole controversial thing. I think teams try it, but they just can't.
Not everybody can do it.
No. And Southampton, Russell Martin wants to play out from the back. He wants to play his style of football, which I think, it worked in the championship, but this is the Premier League. this isn't, it's not going to cut it. I think
it's very quick. High pressing is just commonplace now. Yeah. Everybody pretty much presses high now. It's an intense game. The Premier League is very much like that.
Yeah.
And coming up from the Championship, it is a completely different kettle of fish altogether.
It is. And it doesn't look good for Southampton. So, you know, hopefully I eat my words and Southampton stay up. Let's hope. But yeah, you know, it doesn't look good for them. Anyway, let's head over to the London Stadium. That was the former Olympic Stadium that's now frequented by West Ham. You know what I heard? I heard our head teacher, Darren. Darren is a West Ham supporter.
All right, okay.
Yeah, so if he's listening to this, I've got some positive things to say about West Ham. It was a 4-0 win. 4-1 win.
4-1 win.
Yeah, against them. Ipswich, again, we'll talk about Ipswich in a moment. But West Ham, I think, turned on the quality. They desperately needed a win. And they did. You know, I think the big difference was Mikel Antonio and Bowen. You know, they absolutely turned on the quality against, you know, a side that you would expect them to actually, you know, beat convincingly. Because West Ham, let's not forget, are Europa Conference League winners a couple of seasons ago. You know, they have a pretty decent side. So I think let's not count West Ham completely out yet, because I think, you know, they're probably, for me, finishing mid-table. And they've got a very good manager in Julian Lopetegui, who did manage Spain. Let's not forget that. He was national manager of Spain for probably about 6 months before he quit or was fired or something of that nature. But yeah, Ipswich, it's they're another one who I think, you know, they try to play their style of football. For me, I think Ipswich and maybe Leicester are the sides, the newly promoted sides that could stay up. And in Ipswich, they've got something that maybe the other sides don't have, and that is the son of Rory Delap.
Yeah, Liam.
Liam Delap. Yeah,
he's had a pretty good start.
He's had a really, really good start. This is what three goals in two games, huh? Mm. He's another Manchester City product. I say product with inverted commas. He's not, you know, quotation marks. He's not a product, really, is he? You know, he played for the youth side, but I think, you know, like Manchester City do, they kind of poach fine players from other teams around the country and then pass them off as their own product. I want to talk about that later on, obviously, does Pep actually nurture? Does Pep actually nurture talent? Or does he, you know, use his vast resources to find young players? But Rory Delap, yeah, he's having a good season. I think, you know, if Ipswich go down, which they could
Rory Delap hasn't played in a while, but Liam Delap's having a good season.
Rory Delap is somewhere practicing his throw-ins probably, but Liam Delap even. If Ipswich stay up, a lot of it is going to be to do with Liam. Liam, he's having a very good season. You know, a few teams probably eyeing him up almost definitely. So let's head over to Selhurst Park. That was Liverpool were away, or Palace were hosting Liverpool. And again, you know, that was a Liverpool win, 1-0. But there was another early scare. Yeah, we got away with one, didn't we? Full disclosure, once again, we are Liverpool supporters. So if we sound ever so slightly biased, it's because, you know, we support Liverpool.
That's for me, it was much like the previous games. We didn't play fantastically well, but we still managed to get a result. Palace are not an easy team either.
They're not.
Selhurst Park's not an easy place to go. So I wouldn't say I was. Of course, we got the win. We're not finishing teams off. That's what worries me more than anything else.
No.
So you go 1-0 up, you get that second. Okay, floodgates are probably going to open. You're either going to get another one, or you're just going to have a much more comfortable game. And we didn't, and that worries me, because like keeping it 1-0. I was expecting, you know, a late goal or something, and then a 1-1.
I agree, but I have to say, I think there was a lot of control. I think we did have quite a lot of control after that early goal. You know, well taken goal by Jota, by the way. You know, beautifully made by Cody Gakpo. You know, I think we actually controlled the game quite well. We just didn't finish him off. I think that was a big issue. But at the end of the day, we're top of the league.
We are. You know, I made a few changes as well. Simicast
came in, didn't he? Yeah, it was some good changes.
As I say, Gakpo came in and started. First start of the season.
It was the first start indeed. Yeah.
So and they did well. They came in and they did well. So that's good to see.
Yeah,
so
we should be worried though. Alisson picked up a hammy. hamstring injury, so that doesn't look didn't look quite well. Could be one of those international things where, you know, he picks up an injury so he doesn't travel to Colombia over the international break, and he's, you know, stays at Liverpool to nurse off whatever it is that's wrong with him. Let's hope that's what it is.
I think that's the case.
It's nothing serious.
And actually, this probably came at a good time with picking that injury up, because you get that extra week, don't you? Or whatever it is for him to recover. That being said, in terms of goalkeepers, I was surprised to see Jairos come on, because
Keller wasn't on the bench.
Yeah, he wasn't on the bench, right?
That's
yeah,
why.
No,
Keller wasn't on the bench.
Yeah, but he will be coming in as number one.
Oh, he's proved himself to be
absolute quality. So I don't,
yeah,
I don't worry so much about Alisson being out for a few games, because I think we've got the cover there, and I'm quite happy with Keller. So I think we'll be okay. But yeah, of course, Alisson's next level, isn't he?
He's the best keeper in the world.
Yeah, I agree.
I think, you know, Courtois, he's okay. I'm thinking another German goalkeeper, not Bernd Leno, but I think Alisson is absolutely number one. You know, the things he does, I think even Ramsdale mentioned that he models his style of play under Alisson, his training methods, everything, just because he's a model professional.
Well, you would expect our goalkeepers to be pretty good when our goalkeeping coach is... Taffarel.
Oh,
Claudio Taffarel, the absolute legend that
The Brazilian legend coaching another Brazilian legend.
Yeah.
But the real test will come, because after the international break, we've got a pretty tough few games. We've got Chelsea and Arsenal. We've got a game away at Bayern Leverkusen. We have Brighton twice.
League Cup back-to-back games.
So it's going to be tough. It's going to be a real test for Slotty.
It's gonna be a real test, is he the real deal? This is, and people have every right, I guess, to say this as well. It's like, oh, Liverpool had a really good start to the season.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we have, but we've had pretty easy fixture lists up until now. I mean, I would say pretty easy. Usually when you throw Man United in there, you would assume that would not, you know, you'd say, well, that's not very easy, is it? But unfortunately, the last few seasons, they haven't been all that fantastic, have they?
No. We're going to get onto United later, by the way. We're kind of saving the best for last.
Yeah, we won't get too much into it now. But.
let's head over to the King Power Stadium. That was Leicester versus Bournemouth. That saw Leicester with a 1-0 win. First win for a promoted side. That is shocking. I think seven games into the season, and this is the first win for a promoted side. That is absolutely shocking. I think we should be worried about the gap between the best club, well, you know, the established Premier League clubs and the teams coming up, because I think it's getting wider and wider and wider. You know, I think clubs coming up, teams coming up from the Championship are finding it more difficult, and something has to be done to level the playing field, because, you know, we're going to see a situation where these teams who aren't financially the best will always go back down, unless they make some kind of drastic wholesale change, or they're owned by a Gulf country, or Saudi Arabia, which is in the Gulf, obviously, or some kind of crazy billionaire that just wants to throw money at football teams, you know. So I think, you know, your Leicesters, your Ipswiches, your Southamptons, and anyone else coming up next season are always going to find it tough.
I think they are. I'm an advocate for salary caps and
very good.
And transfer caps and all these kind of things. I very much would be all for that. I think ultimately money will ruin the game, and it will make it just unplayable, as you said, for a lot of teams. We've seen it with Man City. I mean, they just dominate, and it's very hard to get in on the action. And
I think
I think if you've got lots of money, I mean, FIFA Fair Play is meant to be there to kind of regulate this to a point, but of course we're finding out there are ways around
there are
it.
There are loopholes, and I think based on this new case, the loophole shows that it's actually teams interpret the rules how they would like to interpret the rules. And this new one is actually, I think Manchester City have decided that, you know, whatever money they've been receiving was at market value, and they were allowed to interpret it however they wanted to interpret it. So anyway, let's move on, because that's a whole nother financial thing that we don't probably want to get into right now. But let's head over to Goodison Park. That was Everton versus Newcastle. That was a boring, a very boring, oh, really nice boring, 0-0. Oh, yeah. Not so boring, because we had Anthony Gordon going back home. let's not forget, Anthony Gordon, he's apparently a Liverpool supporter. Yes, he is a Liverpool supporter. Apparently, he played in the youth side.
He was when we were interested in him. But I could have sworn, he wasn't very well liked by the Liverpool fans because of comments he made against Liverpool when he was at Everton.
I know.
So I think he was a Liverpool fan when it suited him when we were interested. Yeah. So I'm not 100% sure on that.
Yeah. So anyway, there was a penalty. Anthony Gordon steps up. He apparently has a process. He goes through an awful lot of 10-point process before he takes his penalties. And you would think, you know, that process would work, but this was the one time that process didn't work. And, you know, Pickford, it was a really good save from Pickford. But for me, I'm a strong advocate for when players go back to their clubs, especially if they've left in really controversial circumstances, don't start them. Just, you know, leave them on the bench. And because it was a hotbed, he's going back to Goodison Park and he got stick. Proper stick. They let him know. They let him know how they felt about him moving on to, you know, all Giants, Newcastle and everything else. And yeah, he looked deflated. You know, it was tough for him, you know, so... Yeah.
I kind of get what you're saying. It does actually make sense from a coach's point of view, if you know he's going to get stick, or not be afraid to say, look, they're giving you a lot of grief. You're obviously, you know, not feeling it.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to, you know, we'll take you out and you know, you don't need to go through that.
You don't need 36,000 people telling you how they feel about you. So anyway, I think, you know, these guys, they do, you know, we forget they're human beings and it is tough. Go into these stadiums and getting stick for 90 minutes. You know, but he tried his best. But that penalty, you know, I could have told you, you know, just watch his body language. He's going to miss. Mm. He's almost definitely going to miss. And that's what happened. Anyway, let's head over to the Amex Stadium. That was Brighton versus Spurs, which saw, I shouldn't be laughing, I'm so sorry, but Spurs blowing a 2-goal lead. And apparently this is the 10th time. 10th time this has happened with Ange Postecoglou. This is the record for a manager blowing a 2-goal lead. That is shocking.
His post-match interview, or interviews after that, I mean, he looks like...
He's great to listen to, isn't he?
He was just like, I've never gone through anything as you know, painful as that in my life.
He has, like, 9 previous times.
Oh, I know, but... That one particularly hurt, so far as he would say. I mean, I have to say, what's happening?
It's inconsistent, isn't it?
I like Brighton, and I
love
Brighton.
Yeah,
and that's fine. You come back and you get the win. I definitely could have saw them coming back after you get one. Maybe they get a draw.
Mm-hmm.
But Spurs throwing it away like that.
It's shocking at best. And, you know, you kind of think to yourself, you know, this Ange ball, it's great. You know, it's great for your neutrals watching a team that just wants to attack. It's a great model, but my gosh, close up shop.
Yeah.
You know, you're 2 goals up. You don't need to be pushing everyone to the halfway line. It's just not necessary anymore. You are going to win the game. Just close up shop. That's all it is. And Brighton are a side. We know Brighton. They will carry on playing their football and they will create chances. And that's what they did. And they carried on. And I think their manager might be the real deal. You know, I think he's one to watch.
He does look good, doesn't he?
He looks good. I think, you know, for a guy who how old is he? He's 32, 31.
Like
he's
30s,
he's
yeah.
he's a young man. You know, no Premier League experience whatsoever. And he's, you know, he won Manager of the Month in August. I think he looks the real deal. I think we should start taking Brighton and him more seriously.
Yeah, I mean, from Spurs' point of view, though, I don't think it was like an Ange Ball thing. They just weren't the same team in the second half when they come out. There was no press at all.
I mean,
they gave Brighton far too much time, and they invited Brighton to come at them. And as you said, Brighton will. They'll keep going.
They'll keep going.
Like, right, okay, fair enough.
Absolutely.
You're gonna give us the time. We're going to use it.
Yeah.
And we're going to play around you. And they've got dangerous players. Welbeck again, scoring
Danny
again.
I mean, the renaissance.
Yeah, I know, right?
He's doing incredibly well.
Brian have the players to punish you if you allow them the time to do it. And they didn't allow them the time to do it in the first half. And they did in the second half. There was no press whatsoever. So, I mean, they do deserve it. But I'm not sure that's an Ange...
An Ange issue?
Yeah, an Ange issue. Or so much as the players are maybe like a little bit too confident. Oh, 2-0
up. Confident.
You know, maybe they've kind of like,
oh,
we've got this in the bag. And then before they know it, they haven't.
You know, you say it's not an Ange issue, but I think, you know, it's isn't it the responsibility of the manager? You know, we're 2-0 up. Let's close up shop. This is something like, you know, we want to leave the Amex with something, you know, 3 points at the very least, because we're 2 goals up. You know, we don't let them play their football. We know Brighton.
but absolutely. But I'm sure that's exactly what he said at halftime.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. So he's not going to go out and say, I'll tell you what, second half, we're 2-0 up. I think we're okay, lads. You stand off them, let them have the ball, let them have time, let them ping it around a little bit, and we'll see how we get on. I'm sure we'll be fine.
Yeah.
I don't think he said that at halftime, did he? So he's obviously said that. Look, come on, let's see the game out. Let's not be silly. Let's not do anything crazy.
Yeah.
And the players have just gone out there a little bit too relaxed and just, you know, haven't, in the slightest. And as I say, you've got to in this league now be on them all the time or you're going
to
get
punished. You have to. Anyway, let's head over to Stamford Bridge. That was Chelsea and Forest, which played out a 1-1 draw. You know, I have to say the crop of Chelsea players, you know, I know they've got about 50, 60 players in their roster, but the crop of players playing right now, they don't look half bad. They look okay. There are still issues there, but actually one benefit they have is they're young and they're all on 10-year contracts.
Which is good if they do work out, but if they tend to not work
but
out.
But this is the Chelsea model, because I can imagine, you know, Enzo Maresca will be out of a job within, he won't be there 5 years from now. And that's the biggest issue with Chelsea. I think, you know, there's zero consistency in the coaching staff. You know, it's a constant chopping, changing rotation of managers. And I think that's going to see Chelsea maybe not get the best out of the crop of players. I think Cole Palmer is just, wow, he's an absolute wonder to watch sometimes, isn't he? Four goals in the last game, in game week 6. He's joined the four goals club. I think, who frequents that club? I think that is Frank Lampard, another ex-Chelsea. I think Didier Drogba scored 4 goals. I want to say someone like Yakubu, maybe back in the old days, maybe has scored 4 goals. But there are a few players. Not a lot of players have scored 4 goals. Obviously Aguero, he scored 4 goals, maybe even twice. But yeah, I think Cole Palmer is just, he's doing bits in the Premier League right now. And for me, right now, the best player in the league by a country mile or too far out?
No, I think he's definitely the best player in the league at the moment, the way he's playing.
I think it's
pretty incredible, the stuff he's doing, free kicks. He's got
penalties.
He's got the set pieces.
He's a specialist.
He's, you know, he's assisting, he's getting goals. He's playing incredible
football. He's playing incredible. And again, he's another one. Is he a Man City product? They bought him from Stockport or somewhere along those lines. Was he?
How old was he when they bought him?
That's the big question. I think we'd have to look into that. But, you know, this is the argument people make. Is he actually a Man City product? Or was he another player, another talent that they've seen, you know, scouted at a relatively okay age, and they've developed elements of that technique, but the mentality is still there.
Does he make the Man City team?
100%. I think you look at that Man City side and I think he gets in there categorically with the way he's playing. Should he get into England team? Should he be starting?
Absolutely.
100%. Should he be getting in over Foden? Now that's a question. Is this going to be a situation where we're talking Lampard and Gerrard all over again? Could they play together? Of course they could. It's just we had a poor manager. Poor managers, rather, that couldn't somehow, you know, find a way to play Lampard and Gerrard. Is this going to be a situation with England? Cole Palmer and Foden. And Saka. Let's not forget Saka. So, yeah, what does England do?
Well, I mean, for me, you play the informed players. So he has to play and he has to start because he is the most informed player in the league at the moment. And I think that is how you should... Every England manager needs to be picking players not based on names, not based on reputation, based on form. And I think that makes a lot more sense. So you do that. But yeah, of course, you can find a formation to fit in as 10 centre midfielders, I guess, in a team, can't. Right? But you know what I mean? You can play around with things. If the tactics were as they are now, back when Lampard and Gerrard were playing, where 4-3-3 is a more prominent formation, you could have a deep sitting midfielder and then have Lampard and Gerrard just controlling the middle of the pitch. Right? Then they would have played together. Mm-hmm. And you'd have had those attacking midfielders.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
But it was a different game back then, wasn't it?
It was. But I think for me, I think England should be finding any way, shape, or form of integrating Cole Palmer, build the team around him right now. Because I think he is, for me, I think he actually looks like the most naturally talented players. Just things just look natural to him. They look just normal. And actually, if you've ever heard an interview with Cole Palmer, he's unfazed. He's just like, you know, what do you think of that? He's like, I don't know.
The videos and pictures when yeah. they got into the big fight on the, because it got a bit heated, didn't it, in that game? And then like everyone's like getting involved and Cole Palmer just sitting cross-legged on the grass on his own. He's just like, okay.
Yeah, good for him.
Like,
good
yeah,
for
whatever,
him.
Man. You guys get on with it. I don't care. I'll just play football. Just tell me, let me know when I need to get back out there kind of thing.
Can I say, do you think he stays at Chelsea for the next 5 or so years or does a bigger team come in for him?
I think a bigger team is going to try and come in with for him at some point, of course.
I think so.
If he carries on doing what he's doing, yeah. I mean, bigger teams from abroad or mm-hmm. even in the Prem are gonna have a go. And if Chelsea, I mean, Chelsea is sitting fourth now, and if they manage to finish in the top six, I mean, that'll be quite an achievement.
That'll
given
be an
their
achievement,
last,
considering, yep.
Last few
definitely.
Seasons they've had.
Definitely.
But if they end up going back down to, and having the same problems they had before and end up mid-table.
Not making Champions League.
Yeah,
and
not,
remember,
exactly,
he isn't actually in the European squad because Maresca doesn't want to risk him. So he's not playing any European football at all. And I think Cole Palmer is a guy that should be playing Champions League.
Yeah, I think so.
So,
well, certainly based on what he's doing so far. Let's see how the season goes. But if he carries on doing what he's doing, then yeah, I don't think it's going to be long. And certainly if Chelsea don't start getting a bit better and getting higher up that table and making Champions League or at least competing for it, then yeah, I couldn't see why he wouldn't go somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
But it will cost.
It will cost. It will cost. Oh, yeah. Anyway, let's head over to Villa Park, where Villa hosted United, and that was surprisingly a 0-0. I mean, I thought after game week 6, United, again, getting trounced by Spurs 3-0, you know, I thought the writing was going to be on the wall. You know, I think, you know, Unai Emery, one of the top managers in the league, I think that was ready to be the final nail in the coffin for Ten Hag, and they played out a 0-0 draw. Didn't look good for Ten Hag because the hierarchy, they were all there. Ratcliffe, Sir Alex Ferguson, they were all there watching Hawks from the top,
yes,
ready to make a decision about Ten Hag. And at the point of recording this, I can tell you right now, I'm surprised Ten Hag is still in a job. I don't know how. I've no idea why. But somehow he's still there. This is a team that just looks sad. You know, I don't even think it's funny anymore. It's just, you know, they have to make a decision.
They have to do something. If they lose, if they get hammered, I would imagine he would have been out the door
the next day.
The fact that he got a draw maybe helped him a little bit against Villa, because Villa have been a good side for a while now.
They have, yeah.
So maybe that helped. But I mean, who are you bringing in to replace him? And I think this is always the big question. I mean, who's
available?
Yeah, who's available to come in and replace him? And maybe that's why they're not rushing, because they're like, you know what? We really don't know who we can bring in. Yeah, unless you give it to Van Nistelrooy just to take over an interim. Because I mean, people have talked about that. Okay, we get rid of him. We let Van Nistelrooy do it. Mm. But how many times have we seen this happen before? With like the interim manager comes in. Solskjaer did it, didn't he?
He did it. He was there for a couple of years.
And then he did okay. So like, you know what? Yeah. We'll just give it to him. And then it all went down. You know,
went downhill pretty quickly for him as well. I don't know. I think with the Ten Hag decision, you know, the situation with Ten Hag, they probably should have changed the manager the end of last season. That was probably the right time. They for some reason kept him in a job. It looks a side that's devoid of leadership. You know, there's no one. You've got Fernandes, who is constantly whinging. He should, you know, he's not even an example. And that, I think that's a bigger issue. You know, there are no leaders anymore.
No leaders.
And, you know, I think, you know, United make a decision on Ten Hag, or else, you know, long may this continue. And I think, you know, obviously there's no threat of relegation, but this is a mid-table finish they're looking at. And that, for United, is, I think that's shocking.
I think you've got to, I mean, they keep saying this, like, right, United, fresh start, new manager, new players, right, we're going to, you know, going to change it up. But it never seems to really happen. And I agree with you. I think Fernandes is the wrong choice for captain.
Yeah.
I think he's one of the problems. I think his attitude is terrible. And he doesn't pick the team up. He brings the team down.
He does.
And you need a captain who's going to bring the team up.
Absolutely.
So you've got to, you have him in your team, fine, but you've got him as your captain. You need to find somebody who's going to pick everyone else up and and keep everybody in place around the pitch and say, look, come on, we need to get on and do this.
That's it.
Yeah, we need to get on and start getting results. Until they start making those kind of changes, bold changes, then they're not going to go anywhere.
It's a bold change, and they need to make it now and make it as soon as possible. But, you know, special mention to Villa, who, you know, they had a, you know, legendary win against Bayern Munich. I think I've never seen Villa Park so animated. It was just, it was something else. It was absolutely something else. And, you know, credit to Villa. They're having a great season. Of course, I think tiredness is going to catch them out. I think playing these midweek games, you know, against some tough, tough, tough Champions League opponents and the Premier League is something that's going to catch them up. But they have a really good manager and they've got a really good squad and they've got Duran Duran.
Who's just signed a new contract, I think.
Has he really?
I think he's just signed a new contract.
Good for him. I hope that contract comes with stipulation to actually start games as opposed to coming off the bench. But what do you think?
Well, he's a bit of a super sub though, isn't he?
Sometimes
players are just like that. You know, you start them, they don't do so well. I mean, I don't know if he started a game this season, but you bring him off the bench and they're impact players. And, you know, if it works, it works. But ultimately, yeah, I mean, I think he is quality. He's had a great start to the campaign this year. So he deserves to be starting some games at least to see if he can do the business over the course of 90 minutes as opposed to just 20.
I mean, if you think you're on £100,000 a week and you playing 20 minutes a game, that's an okay return, isn't it? But, you know, he's a football player. It's his passion. I would want to be starting. I said last week, I'll be banging on the manager's door. I need to start. You know, there's no reason. But I think Unai Emery has himself said, you know, they're looking a way to change the system to get Duran and Ollie Watkins playing together. Yeah. So hopefully we can see more of Duran. And he won goal of the month award. So the absolute screamer he scored against them. Who was it, Leicester or something? So yeah, Marty, thank you very much. That's the football roundup for the week. That was the football full disclosure. Thank you very much for listening. We do have an international break, so unfortunately we won't be back until 9 days time or 11 days. Well, let's call it 2 weeks. So, well, we'll see you guys then. Thank you very much, Marty. Thank you once again for your amazing football knowledge. Thank you, everyone. Bye-bye.